When you're trading options, Fidelity has just what you need with straightforward but powerful tools to help you select a strategy and execute your ideas. And they offer a wide range of information and insights to help simplify your trading experience. Have a question? Ask it live during their small classes and coaching sessions. Need information? Check out their educational videos, articles, and webinars. See why it's easy to trade options your way at Fidelity. Start now at fidelity.com/options. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. Tuesday, the 23rd of April. Guy Adami, Dan Nathan, soon to be joined by the great Carter Braxtonworth. It's 1 p.m. on the East Coast, a day in the aftermath of what was one of the more interesting basketball games last night at the world's most famous arena. Yes, there's an arrogance associated with that, but it happens to be true. Of course, Dan Nathan was in attendance last night, and he wasn't one of those people that left early. As a matter of fact, I don't think anybody did. That was quite the finish. Eerily reminiscent, I believe, was May 7th, 1999, when, if you recall, Reggie Miller just left the Knicks when he was playing for the Pacers. That's what I put out on the Twitter. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing, you know, it was one of those moments in the world's most famous arena that you didn't want to leave. I mean, a lot of folks just kind of hung around because they were really prepared with about 40 seconds left to be very disappointed, and it changed very quickly. So that was exciting. Heading back to MSG tonight, Guy, for Rangers game two. How about that? That's why we live in a fine city like this.
The security people are going to know who you are. They don't already.
They might do. They might do. We got a lot to cover today. You know, like I said, we started Market Call yesterday saying, you know, you leave for a week and all heck breaks loose in the markets. It feels like we're on a slightly better footing this week, Guy. You come back and we start rallying. What's up with that?
Well, looked at a couple things yesterday that would indicate, and Doug Cass sent us an email. It's probably out there on Twitter that, you know, his indicators suggested that the market was short-term oversold. That proved to be obviously the case yesterday and to a certain extent today as well. I think what we're seeing, again, my opinion, is we're working off those oversold, short-term oversold conditions. And, you know, we highlighted the S&P bounced off a level, made a lot of sense. The NASDAQ violated it, probably trading back to it now. So there are a lot of things in play. You know, I'll say again, I don't think by any stretch we're out of the woods yet, but it's been a good day and a half, nothing else. And you have a VIX, which I think peaked north of 21 or so at its height a week or so ago, you know, back down with a 16 handle last I looked. So yeah, I mean, there are things to be encouraged by. But again, the question is, what we saw last week, was that enough? Or was this just the start of something and we're seeing, again, a bounce in a market that's headed lower? That's really the determination one has to make.
And listen, you know what? Let's throw the rundown up, because what's going on for the rest of the week is probably going to dictate that next 5% move in the S&P 500. You know, there's a couple pieces of economic data that we're going to touch on, and that could be the key to whether we have the 10-year yield guy back testing, you know, the fall highs of about 5%. But really, you know, to me, it comes down to earnings when you think about it, and what sort of visibility a lot of these big mega cap tech companies have. And then we're going to hit a bunch of trades here. We're going to trade a little Intel. We're going to trade the energy complex guy. Yeah. And we're going to review a couple trade ideas from the last few weeks or so. All right. What are you more geeked up about on the economic front? Is it Thursday morning GDP, Q1, that is, okay? Or is it the PCE that comes out on Friday? Do you have a sense of one of them being a bigger potential mover for yields?
And so to answer your question specifically, it's Friday's PCE, although I think most would admit that, you know, both are important. But if I had to pick between the two, I think it's Friday's PCE. Elizabeth and I actually talked about it yesterday on the Type podcast, the importance of it. And that's the Fed sort of, the indicator, the metric they most closely watch. So if they're closely watching it, safe to say that the market is as well. So it's safe to say that I should. Although I will say if GDP comes in more robust than the market is looking for, I don't know what the market interpretation is going to be. I do think I know it's going to happen to yields, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But it's PCE over GDP by a slim margin for me.
Yeah, I guess the thing about GDP that's interesting to me, Guy, is that, you know, this goes back to mid-December. We've highlighted this a bunch. There was that Fed Chair Powell. He was doing the presser at the FOMC meeting. And at the time, I just thought it was really interesting that investors started pricing in 6 rate cuts in 2024. But he was also indicating that GDP, at least their kind of estimate for growth in 2024, was going to be 1.4%. In March, we know that they raised that estimate to 2.1%. You and I talked about it a little bit yesterday. That was basically the 10-year average prior to COVID. So this is why I find those two prints really interesting next to each other, because if, let's say, we're going to get back to GDP trend, but we still have inflation well above trend, you can say hasta la vista, right, to those rate cuts that were being priced in. And those were the things that got the stock market going, right? And, you know, it's interesting because there was a title, there was an article in the FT today talking about, you ready for this? Rate hike.
Yeah.
Building. Rate hike bets building. Not on most people's bingo card headed into this year, but it was on your bingo card.
We had mentioned it a few times over the last 5 or 6 months, probably. It didn't seem, it seemed like a bit of an outlier at the time. But, you know, if you had the view that, again, more so the inflation front was going to remain a problem, it didn't make any sense to me to even begin to talk about rate cuts. And if it became more of a problem than even I thought, you know, rate hikes had to be in the cards. And now the fact that people are starting to talk about it again, by the way, I don't think that's at all the base case. I think maybe there's at best a 10% chance of that this year, at best, if not lower. But the fact that the market is talking about it is something to keep in, take into consideration, which should basically take us to the yields chart. Because, you know, again, I think, again, my opinion, I think most things are being driven by what's going on in yields. And earlier today, you know, we put on the Instagram, and we'll look at that, that I thought, you know, as the 2-year got towards 5%, and that might be a level that the market started to take notice. But here we are. There's your 2-year yield, 4.93. And we approached it a couple times. For whatever reason, the market is absolutely sort of giving it the Heisman there. I don't know if there are forces at work, but 5% is clearly a level that it does not want to breach yet. I think the longer we stay around here, the more inclined we are to get through to the upside. But it's, again, the 10-year yields that people watch. So, you know, we'll take a look at this. And, you know, even when bonds rally, and either when the TLT rallies, they're not all that robust to rally. And it's not like yields are cascading lower. So, you know, again, I find myself still in the camp that rates go higher a little, you know, some maybe pauses along the way, but I think the trajectory is lower left, upper right in terms of yields.
Yeah. And you know, I thought it would be interesting to take a look, you know, at the TLT. So this is the iShares 20-year Treasury ETF, right? So the price of this is obviously the opposite of what yields are doing. And this is good enough to kind of focus on, you know, like if this thing is going down, that means that generally yields on the longer end are going up, right? And so when you look at this, I'm just like, with those two events, Guy, you could look at the at-the-money straddle if you want to just price expected movement just on this week. And I'd love to get your take, whether you think it's a lot or a little. The ETF is trading at 89.25. You just look at the April 26. That's this Friday expiration at the money straddle. That's the call premium plus the put premium, and it adds up to about $1. So you can do that math. It's a little more than a 1% implied move in the TLT between now and the end of Friday. Does that make some sense to you? Because again, if you could kind of back into this, a 1% move in that equals what, 10 basis points maybe in the 10-year or something like that.
So to answer your question specifically, no, actually, it doesn't make a lot. Again, the same way, and if you recall a couple of weeks ago before I went away, you know, I think JP Morgan options were the implied move was about a 3% move, maybe 3.2% move-ish. And I was surprised it was that low. Now, that turned out to be a correct being surprised because I think the stock moved on earnings about 6% or so, or a little more than 5.5%. But you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So in the same way I thought those options were probably cheap, it's the same way I think things are a little bit cheap here. And You've seen days where the TLT has moved 1.5%, 2%. And now we're basically on the back end of a GDP print and obviously this PCE. So just looking at this, I mean, I can't speak intelligently about historic vol in the TLT, but it seems a bit cheap to me. And I understand that it's only, 4 days or so from now.
Yep, no doubt. All right. You mentioned him before. Let's bring him in. That would be Carter Braxton Worth of Worth Charting. There he is.
Man, how are you?
We had a heck of a show last night. CNBC's
Fat Monday. It was fun. We did it.
These three good looking.
Laughed, cried.
Yeah, it was better than cats. CB Dubs, earnings this week. We're getting going here. It's always interesting. And Guy and I were just talking about this on the CNBC Fast Money call just about a half an hour ago. It's, we know that banks usually get earnings season kicked off. We know that Netflix is the first of the tech ones. And often, that kind of tone that we get early on, it might mark the early phase of earnings, but oftentimes it does switch in a way. And so last week, it was a kind of downbeat tone in the broad market. But this week is getting off to a better start. If we were to get some better than expected reports from some of the biggest movers or, the biggest leaders in the market, could we be seeing new highs in the S&P 500? We'd love to get your kind of technical take on the S&P 500 because, again, it seemed like a pretty dangerous setup. You sell them off. Sentiment's really bad. We got geopolitical stuff. We got fears of higher rates. We got maybe earnings disappointments in the offing, but that seems like it could change on a dime too.
Yeah, I mean, it gets down to the simple question, whether the 6 months preceding 28% advance in the S&P, 6 months in duration, 28% in terms of magnitude, 32 in the Qs, 60 in the SOX, is that steep, uncorrected 6 month advance corrected? And forget the 10%. That is nowhere is it written. You can look the world over. 10%. Who made that up? No one knows. It's just something that got into the popular culture. In terms of what corrects something that's steep and uncorrected is time and price. So, 10, 12 sessions typically is not enough. And down what, 6%, 6.5% from its peak, the S&P, probably not enough. That's my thinking.
Yeah, Carr, you kind of laid that out on Fast Money last night also. And again, when you see this sort of V sort of reversal right here, driven by some of the leadership, makes you think, okay, beat and raise by Microsoft later on this week and a couple other names, maybe you get going. Guy, what do you think? I mean, a little bit of a head fake here. Some of the biggest drivers so far this week have been banks. They've been kind of rate sensitive sort of names. Nvidia has gotten back a lot of its losses from Friday, closed down 10% on the lows. I also think it's interesting that JP Morgan, maybe they can pull up a live chart of JP Morgan. We were remarking the Friday before last, when that was down 6.5%, was a massive move, right? Look at that. It's almost filled in that gap. So what are some of the things that you're most focused on as we get into the meat of the big tech earnings?
Well, counterintuitively, I think the worst thing that's happening to JP Morgan right now is that we're filling in that gap because, if we do it, I think we basically have, but, fill in that gap then sort of allows that relief to sort of continue on its way lower. If we had been unabated lower, I think the snapback would have been more violent than what we're seeing now, number one. Number two, I think you're correct to bring up Microsoft. But again, Microsoft finds itself trading about, even with the recent sell-off, about 31 times-ish next year's numbers, which is expensive given, to them historically. So clearly, I want to hear what their, not necessarily the quarter is, but what their sort of forecast and their guide is to the extent that they have visibility. I think that's important. I will continue to say that Apple trades horribly. I think this bounce in NVIDIA is exactly that, a bounce off again. Doug Cass, again, to invoke his name, mentioned was an oversold condition. We're probably still slightly oversold, or I think we're quickly working that off. So, it's going to be commentary. It's going to be visibility and those types of things. And it also is going to be come down to what rates do on the back of the things we see on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, no doubt. It's interesting. Back in the late 90s, people think it was the dot-com bubble. The guy that I worked for at a hedge fund, he was a very active momentum trader. And there were two names that he used to stare at all day long. He used to stare at the S&P futures, and he used to stare at Intel and Microsoft. They were the bellwethers. Okay. So you had all these upstarts, you had the Excite, you had the AOL, you had the Yahoo, you had the Amazon and the stuff. Those were the fun things to trade. but which direction Intel and Microsoft were going, and if they were going together in the same direction, that was like a really good momentum indicator for him. So it's funny that we're talking about Microsoft, largest market cap company in the world right now. Intel is one that has been sneakily left for dead. I mean, literally, it kind of joined the generative AI party, you know, this was a few months ago. Since then, it's down 33% or so from its December highs. It's down about 20% just in the last month. The company reports earnings. This is on Thursday after the bell. The implied move, you see it there. Nice little deco from AD. That would be Amanda Diaz right there. 6.5% implied move in either direction. But this is the one that I find really interesting. When you think about how bad the stock acts, how poor the chart looks, then you look at the sentiment from sell side analysts here. Okay, look at that. There are only 10 buys. There are, 29 holds on the stock. And 7 sells. Carter, talk to us a little bit about, and maybe we can throw that 1 year chart up a little bit. I mean, the sentiment could not be worse in this stock right now.
Right. I mean, a couple of ways to make that point. If we look at the inception of the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index in 1994, Intel is at an all-time low relative to that space, relative to its peer group, to the SOX. It's at a 20-30-year low relative to the S&P, and the day-to-day chart, as you point out here, is just in a straight free fall. And so from time to time, it's fun to try to speculate. That's all it is, right? Something that's in an established downtrend and then crashing. Do you play for a bounce? It's dangerous work, but it has its time and place, and it's what is characterized in my work as so bad that it's good. And I think this is an instance where one can make that judgment and speculate on a small scale.
Yeah, Guy, really quickly here. Again, you know, earnings have come down from like $5.50 from a few years ago, expected to be, I don't know, $1.30 or something like that, and then expected to grow maybe 60% next year. But that's still less than 50% of their peak earnings just a few years ago. You've made this point on many occasions. We know that they've gotten some big grants from the CHIPS Act. You've called it like a national security play, if you will. What would it take? You know, it's trading at about 26 times this year, okay, expected to grow earnings about 25%. Next year, 60% expected EPS growth, trading at about 16 times. Here's the most important part. Gross margins are expected to recover here, okay? So they're expected to be, let's call it 46% this year, up from 43% last year, 48% expected next year. If this company is able to just guide, let's call it just up a little bit here, and let's be clear, expectations are really low. Is this a scenario where you think that this stock could get going in the near term? And you see that 150-day moving average up there at about 40. Doesn't that seem like a really reasonable near-term target here?
Yeah, I think it's a 200-day, but I'm not equivocating here. You're right. I think $40 makes sense. And what I'll say is this. Yeah, I do believe, and listen, I've thought it's a homeland security play for a while, and the stock's basically been upper left, lower right. So that clearly is not factored into the stock price. But you know, if they say something even marginally in line in terms of data center, which has been a disaster for them probably for the last 2.5 years, you know, I do think you're going to get this relief rally. And again, I think people understand that this is not an AI play. I mean, that ship has sailed in terms of what Intel is looking to do probably, but it's still a pretty viable company that trades at a trough valuation compared to its peers. Rightly so, by the way. But anything in line, I believe, I think you could see that bounce to the moving average. And, you know, that just gets us back, you know, half of what we've lost over the last couple months. I don't think that's ridiculous. And I think, you know, there's a way to play it vis-a-vis options.
Yeah. And again, I think that you guys have both articulated, you kind of want to define your risk here, right? And so if I want to look at the, you know, the options market, there's something that kind of looks like, you know, maybe dealers are kind of underpricing the potential move. Like, I just think a 6.5% move, if you get this thing going higher, I think it's up 10% really easily over the next few weeks or so, and maybe on its way to about, you know, 15-16%, which would get you back towards $40. So I want to look at May expiration. So today, when Intel was trading about 34.40, you could buy the May 35.40 call spread, paying about $1 for that, buying one of the May 35 calls at about $1.25, selling one of the May 40 calls at about 25 cents. Again, you know, $1 is that max premium outlay, and that's your max potential loss. You have profits up to $4 between 36 and 40, max profit above 40 on May expiration, losses of up to one between 35 and 36 with a max loss of $1 below 35. Again, this is risking only about 3% of the stock price. I have a break even up about 4.5%, and I have a max potential gain of 4 times the premium I have at risk. And again, if this stock, let's just say, doesn't go in the right direction, say it just goes sideways for whatever reason, you know, I'm risking 3%. If it's a miss and guide down, the stock's going back to 30. I mean, like that's just a fact. And so I like the risk reward here. And like all long premium directional trades, if this trade is, you know, loses value and it's about 50 cents or so, about 50% of the premium that I paid as out the door, I want to cut my losses here. And the flip side of that, if I get this going in the right direction and have a double, I want to look to take half off. So Guy, talk to me about what you think about the risk reward of this trade.
Well, I think it's personally, I think it sets up really well. Again, there's look, if I had a guess, it's probably sort of a 65-35 against you, or maybe 60-40-ish, if I'm doing the math correctly. But with that said, you know, anything in line and get a pretty robust return here. So the risk reward makes sense. And I think you've defined your risk really well. So, you know, we're not suggesting Intel is a long-term hold here. You know, we're not suggesting they figured out their woes. I don't think either of those are the case. All I think that could happen is you see a relief rally, and we've seen it before with different names. It stands to reason we could see it here with Intel.
Fair enough. And again, you know, sometimes I just figure out probabilities. Like if I look at the 36 call in May, it's got about a 38 delta. That's basically saying it's got about a 38% probability of being in the money. So Nostradamus, you just don't even have your options chain up there, and you're figuring it all out. Here's one sector that you have been very bullish on, Carter has been very bullish on, and is the energy patch, as they say.
Trading options might be new for you, or maybe you've been doing it for a while. Either way, Fidelity is your go-to source for clear and relevant information about trading options. For example, ask Fidelity professionals questions during their live small classes and coaching sessions and learn more with educational videos, articles, and webinars. Plus, with Fidelity's straightforward tools and technology, you'll find it easier than ever to trade options your way. See what's waiting for you at fidelity.com/options.
Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request.
This week, we're going to have some oil companies reporting earnings. Carter, ExxonMobil caught your eye. Let us know what you're seeing. And then, Guy, I know you got a bullish take on these large integrated names, but you've also been pounding the table on a whole host of other names in the sector. And we'll probably take a look at an ETF that incorporates a lot of the performance of these names. So, Carter, tell us what you're seeing in the XOM.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, energy as a sector is almost not a sector, right? At 4.2% weight, the entire S&P and three stocks, Exxon, Chevron, and Conoco, are 50% of the sector. So it's really, is it a sector? We know it employs hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people on ancillary jobs and is a very important part of the economy. But curiously, it's not the 1970s. It is a small part of the S&P 500. That being said, Exxon is the big one. It is the most important integrated carbon fuel company in the world, bar none, holding aside Saudi Aramco. The way to draw the lines, I would say, are as follows. This is no lines. Let's put some in. And the issue here is we are toying with the prospects of moving above well-defined intermediate highs and 52-week highs on the level. You see the 128 level. You see the move briefly above it. The consolidating at that level, that's good sequencing. The presumption is we break out. So you can annotate that way. You can put on a line just to next iteration. It doesn't matter how you draw the lines. The presumption is this stock is up 2% over the past 12 months, the S&P up 18, 19%, that it's done nothing. And it's time for catch up, both not only on a relative basis, but as an absolute trade likely to break out.
Agreed. You know, and I've talked about valuation, and you don't necessarily trade these stocks specifically on valuation. But with that said, the valuation has been compelling for quite some time. These are better run companies. They're probably, in terms of ESG, if that's even an important thing anymore, they're probably the most robust ESG companies out there because they were forced to be. their balance sheets are in great shape. And, you know, they went to a lot of different scenarios. What I'll tell you is I've liked Exxon for a while. I was shocked when it basically went from an all-time high of about 121 down to, I think, 98 or so. And that was right after we had a host of sort of M&A news came into the space. And I also think that sort of coincided with interest rates going from 5% down to 3.8%, which got everybody back into the tech trade. The energy trade lost to that. So as rates have come back up, all this makes a lot of sense to me. The sort of the cherry on top, Dan, again, my opinion, is sort of getting this robust move through these levels on the back of earnings. And whether it's Exxon, Chevron, or ConocoPhillips, I mean, you're splitting hairs between the three, basically. But I do like them all. And I think Exxon's probably the most important of the three in terms of sort of the statement it makes to the broader market.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And so when you have a single name like this, it's had a big move, you know, and obviously you have a bullish fundamental take. Carter has a bullish technical take. It's pretty idiosyncratic just to play Exxon. You know, I was looking at the options in Exxon and I couldn't really find a structure, maybe selling some downside puts. We talk about that a little bit and we're kind of careful, very, very careful of doing that. And I was even looking down as far as like the 105s in Exxon, and you just weren't getting a lot. You were getting less than 1% looking like a month and a half out or so. So that led me, you're shaking your head, and as a rule, you don't want to sell, you know, dollar cheap options like that, especially, you know, in an instrument that has had this sort of run. I wanted to look at the XLE. You guys mentioned it. There it is. You know, Exxon and Chevron make about 40% of that. I just like this vehicle because you're not taking that idiosyncratic risk. And I think if you guys are both right on Exxon, XLE is going to work. But the risk reward looks a little less interesting than playing a single name. So I want to look at the XLE. I want to look out to July expiration. I want to track your bullish fundamental take and his bullish technical take here. And I want to buy the July 96 105 call spread. That was when the stock was, or the ETF was trading 95.62, buying one of the July 96 calls for about $3.80, selling one of the July 105 calls at about 80 cents. So it costs you $3. That is your max risk. You can do the math, about 3.5% of ETF. I have about 2.5 months or so for this thing to play out a little bit. I have profits up to $6 between 99 and 105, and I have a max gain of 6 above 105, losses up to 3 between 96 and 99 with a max loss of 3 below 96. So this one doesn't have that great of a risk reward. I'm risking 3 to possibly make 6 if the ETF is 105 on July expiration, but it is a pretty decent way to play for the sort of move that you guys are indicating, maybe a 10% rally in Exxon, which should drag up the XLE with it. And maybe it's a slow way to kind of participate in this. And just one last thing, if I'm looking at the delta on the July 99 call, guy, it's about 42%. Yeah. So 42% probability it's in the money. And just want to make one last point. The longer duration, the higher probability you're going to have because you have more time for something like this to play out.
So here's the only caveat I would make to this or change. And again, this gets into sort of higher level option stuff. Again, I'm not suggesting anybody should do this, but it's something to think about. Again, I believe that Exxon, Chevron, Conoco, I all think they're going to move to the upside in a pretty meaningful way, which by definition means the XLE is going to move higher as well. As you outlined, those three stocks are 49% of the ETF. So what you could potentially do here is buy that call for $3.80 and wait to sell the 105 call with the thought that you get through the weekend, XLE will be higher. So instead of selling something for 80 cents, you might be able to sell it for maybe a buck and a quarter or a buck and a half and then mitigate some of that cost. That's the only change that I would make. And again, that's just me and that's legging into things, but yep. You know, that's just a sort of a, I don't know, a stylistic thing.
No, I think that's a great point. And especially in an ETF where the vol is generally going to be lower than the component names within it, that's probably a good way to trade it. You get that move. So I appreciate that. All right, Carter Braxtonworth, we got one thing to do with you. We're going to update a few trades, but we want to look at the Tesla. Tesla reports today after the close. We talked about it a little bit on Fast Money last night. We've been talking about the three of us collectively, it seems like for a year, and just highlighting, you know, selling every rally. And this has been one of the most well-defined downtrends, to use your phraseology, I can remember in a very long time in a stock as meaningful as this. Put that in some context for us, because at its all-time highs, this stock was over $1 trillion in market cap, and now it's less than a half a trillion. And it's massively, you use, you know, the relative strength argument last night, it's probably one of the biggest disasters in the history of the stock market relating to the broad market and how well it's done relative to one of its biggest components.
Well, yeah, I mean, before we even look at the charts, I mean, this is one of the most volatile securities in the market for its cap, right? Small cap, meaning this little companies buy out to whip around. But I mean, we know that essentially Tesla went from $25 to $400 in a matter of 2019 to 2021. And then it plunged from 400 to 100, dropping 78% of its value in 1 year, then ricocheted, as we all know, from 100 to 300, then gave it all back. And here we are, 145. The burden of proof is on the bulls. The bears have to say nothing. They don't, other than point to the fact that right now it's $145 a share. It's been descending since 300 over the past 12 months. The definition of poor relative strength, bearish price volume correlation, dropping and gapping. And also, again, at 145, it closed Q3 2020 at 145. So September 30, 2020, $1.45. And here we are, Q2 2024, $1.45. So around from 145 to 425, back to 145. And the question is, where does the selling abate? To my eye, it doesn't abate anytime soon. Let's look at some charts and see what we can do. So, as is so often the case, the lines draw themselves. And where does the stock stop? To the penny, over like a pinball machine. And again, I like this. It comes to mind. This is an anathema to HBS, Harvard Business School. They hate this. This is anathema to the CFA Society. They can't stand this. And the Federal Reserve Bank, who doesn't know anything about it either, looks at it with a great question mark. Well, welcome aboard, everyone. This is often how it works. Now, does it bounce here or does it break here? No idea. My bet is lower. We put out a survey and give you the respondents from hundreds and hundreds of institutional accounts, individual accounts. This is all types, from long-only mutual fund companies, pension plans, family offices, long-short hedge funds. And not to mention individual investors. And it's running, in fact, I wrote it down. Individual investors are 56% down. So there's slight bias down. Institutional are 52. And that's not a big spread. So basically pretty close to 50-50. I picked the red arrow. Men, what's your pick?
Well, I'll say real quick, if you've been short the stock and you've enjoyed this move to the downside, discipline suggests you do something here ahead of it, whether it's cover a quarter, half, whatever you do, you're sort of forced to do something. But with that said, you know, I think the path of least resistance continues to be lower. And if you do see a bounce here, which you've seen before, I mean, bounces have been sold in the stock. It's plain and simple. On a broader market, which has been extraordinary over the last couple of years, despite the last couple of weeks, as Carter just said, as we said last night, you're talking about a stock that's some 65% or so off its prior all-time high, which is not a pretty robust. You can say what you want. We're haters. Say what you want. But the reality is, I mean, this has not been a good stock to hold over the last 3 years.
Yeah. And I'll just say this. So if I was long the stock, okay, and saying, oh my goodness, the stock has come in so far, so fast. I'm looking at Carter's charts and I want to choose that green arrow because that has kind of held like a boss, if you think about it, on some pretty big down graphs over the last few years or so, you know, could I see a 10% move? That's the implied move, you know, to the upside, a little bit of relief. I said it on Fast Money last night. I just can't remember a setup like this into a print where every single piece of news is negative, every single thing for weeks. And this has been going on for 3 weeks since they announced their Q1 deliveries that were really disappointing. Remember the stock plunge? So I don't love the idea of pressing it here. If I was long the stock, I would think about a collar, selling an out of the money call, maybe a May expiration. Let's say a 10% implied move. Let's say I want to sell a call up 20 bucks. I'm looking at May expiration. The 165 call in May, I could sell for about, I don't know, 3.25 or something like that. Then I would use those proceeds and I'd buy an out of the money put, maybe down 20 bucks, right? So I have $20 of upside, but I'm protected down 20. Now you would do this at this juncture right here. only if you thought there was more potential downside to holding the stock than upside if it were to bounce. So that's one way I would think about kind of protecting the stock here. But Guy, I agree with you. If you have been short of this stock, it's like move your feet just a little bit because you could get a near-term pop and that could set up as another great opportunity to reshort it.
Yeah. That, and real quick, before we go to a couple updates, that's the thing. Move your feet because, again, if you've been shorted and you buy some back, if the stock does pop, it allows you to give some ammunition to sell it again on the bounce. If the stock trades lower from here, you're still short a portion of that position. So it gives you flexibility. I say it all the time, Dan, trade the stock. Don't let the stock trade you.
There you go. All right, Carter Braxtonworth, we appreciate all of your help today. You guys know where to find him, worthcharting.com. And I love those surveys that you do. I will say this in full disclosure. I chose the down arrow on the survey, but you heard my somewhat cautious tone about pressing the short right here. So it's a bit nuanced. So thanks, Carter. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Bye.
All right, Guy, let's update a couple trade ideas. This was from last week. This was not a good one. And, you know, again, I think we're really clear on this. We've been clear on this for years and years and years. The idea of trading a stock, whether it be shorting it if you're a trader or buying it into a print just for that earnings, can end up being a very binary sort of situation, which is one of the reasons why if you're inclined to play for a move, you know, after earnings, I mean, being positioned into the print, we do appreciate the idea of defining a risk and basically knowing what you can lose if you get it wrong. Well, that was the case in American Express. So last week, it was April 19th. We detailed, a bearish view that I had fundamentally based on some of the things that I heard as it related to consumer credit, you know, from some of the big money center banks and the like the week before. So I was looking at American Express. They reported on, I believe, Thursday. I was looking at the June 220-180 put spread. It cost about $10. So a quarter of the width of that put spread. I was targeting some technical levels here. Listen, this has not worked out. The stock is up $20 here. So at 237, this trade that cost 10, okay, a week ago, or a little more than a week ago, is now worth two. And Carter uses this expression all the time, first loss, best loss. I mean, this thing gapped up right after that report, Guy, and you should have been kind of moving your feet to get out of it. But here we are a few days later. We've had some follow through here, and now it's only worth two. I think you have to cut this and move on. The last thing we want to do is see a bunch of long premium directional trades in our trading portfolio go to zero.
I agreed, but what I'll say is there's going to be an opportunity to revisit this at some point. It's like, you know, in a typical major league game, you get four at-bats and you can go for three, but your final at-bat could, you know, be one that helps your team win the game. And I think that's when I look at American Express, before we move on quickly, what I see is a stock that's really on the precipice of something happening in terms of consumer credit. Obviously, as opposed to MasterCard and Visa, which are just transaction-based companies, this is a company that takes credit risk. And there's going to be something that happens out there that's going to be deleterious to their business model. Obviously, it was not this quarter, but I think it's coming to a theater near you. So stay tuned. Also, you have that gap in the chart somewhere around 185 to 190 that sticks out like, again, a sore thumb. So that's my 2 cents.
All right. You just mentioned Visa. And again, I think that's a really important point that this is about transaction volumes and processing fees, right? And one of the things that I heard at Bank of America, JP Morgan, even American Express said this, they're starting to see a slightly softening consumer spending environment. You've highlighted all of the explosion in consumer credit. So if you were to see a softening spend environment, doesn't that lead you to believe that you're going to see lower transactions? This chart is pretty fascinating to me, Guy. You had that breakout. It got back towards those 2021 highs here, and it's pulled back a little bit. This is a stock that is not cheap by any means, right? Trades at a big premium to many consumer finance sort of companies, if you will. You see the lines that I've drawn, that breakout level from December, you see that uptrend, you can barely see that moving average, that 200-day that's tracking that uptrend that's been in place. But this is a company that for, you know, mid-teens or low teens expected earnings growth for the next 2 years, trades at about 27 and a half times this year, 25 times next. So it's not like there's a lot of room for a slowdown here on the multiple front.
I look at this, and you know, if you watch Fast Money over the years, Visa and MasterCard are two names we've highlighted for a long time, sort of that secular shift to basically transaction-based using credit cards, getting away from a cash society, get into these transactions. That's actually proven correct. However, along the way, you've seen moves to the downside. And that prior all-time high, which was probably about 250-ish or so, you know, the check back to that level makes sense to me. It doesn't mean anything is broken by any stretch of the imagination. You still have the moving average working for you. You still have that uptrend working for you. But a sort of a check back to that level makes sense to me.
All right. One last thing before we get out of here. We just talked about a collar and how that might be useful if you were long Tesla. Back on March 12th, we were looking at NVIDIA. Okay. So you had highlighted, I think one of the reasons why was that huge reversal we had seen on the Friday, March 8th. You've mentioned that a bunch of times and how significant you think that was for just really a shift as far as momentum in the semi trade, which has been leading the tech trade overall, right? So we detailed a collar for people who are long the stock, enjoyed massive gains. When the stock was 905 on March 12th, let's be clear, the stock had come from below $500 in the first week of January. So you see how much it had appreciated. So we're saying basically, let's look out to that nice round number of 1,000 that was just above that intraday high from March 8th. Let's sell an out of the money call versus 100 shares of stock that you own. Let's use that premium that you got from selling the call and buy a downside put. We also highlighted the fact that the skew was to the calls. They were more expensive than the puts. That's one of the reasons why you and I felt very comfortable in kind of articulating that trade idea. All right, well, this was April expiration. April expiration was on Friday. Friday, the stock closed down 10% at 760. All right. So that out of the money call expired worthless that you sold, and the put that you bought for basically no cost, okay, was worth $90. Think of that. It mitigated 10% of the loss that you had in the stock. That's one of the reasons why we like to highlight these different trade structures for people who are long stocks or short stocks. There's lots of different ways that you can use options to mitigate risk. So again, you would have needed to close this long call against your long stock, okay? The long put versus your long stock, but it would have mitigated those losses on Friday's close. And that was a perfect example, almost textbook, of how to use options to protect gains in a stock and define your risk.
Well, that is a textbook example because, as you said, it mitigated your risk. What it allowed you to do is basically weather this storm. And the flip side of that coin would have been the stock exploding through 1,000. And then people would have been like, why would I sell? I got called away. And I listen, yeah. But the flip side of the coin is, you know, you've just endured one of the bigger downdrafts we've seen in the stock, and you were able to do it through this, basically through this strategy. That's why it made a lot of sense at the time. And that's why we're sort of highlighting it now, just to show you how these things work in real time.
Yeah, and not only that, look at how much the stock has bounced from Friday's close. So yeah, you had the protection through expiration. And then, you know, here's the other thing. It's also one of the reasons why we line up technicals with basically how we're trading stocks and how we're choosing strikes. And, you know, that 850 level, you know, was a breakdown level. And then it got to filled in a gap, or got down to a gap level, and it stopped there. And it was interesting that it closed perfectly down 10% on Friday. So that's it. Those are our updates. We had one that worked. We had one that didn't. It's all about risk management here, people. And just using all the different inputs that we do, from the events to valuation to some other fundamental catalyst inputs, and obviously the technicals with our main man, Carter Braxton.
Regardless, we will be back tomorrow, as we are every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I want to thank Carter Braxton Worth. Obviously, thank our sponsors as well. Rangers do play tonight. Dan will be in attendance. Game 2 against the Caps. I don't make any predictions. You know, you don't touch the money when you're a sports fan, because you do not want to put the Malloy on things. With that said, I'm looking forward to tonight's game. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow, folks.
See you, everyone.